This is Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. Next Tuesday at this time, NPR's Talk of the Nation will be broadcasting live from National Geographic in Washington, D.C. The conversation will focus on megacities with National Geographic science editor Ron Kunzig and NPR's Steve Inskeep. For free tickets, email talk@npr.org and put tickets in the subject line. Next up on this program, bedbugs, as you may have heard, are having a renaissance in cities all over the United States, in bedrooms, of course, but also in department stores, office buildings, movie theaters, and they're not cheap to get rid of. My next guest estimates New York City alone spends anywhere from $10 to $40 million a year to control them. What's behind their wild success? One reason which you hopefully haven't experienced firsthand is their ability to withstand our most common chemical weapons. Another has to do with their remarkably strange sex lives, two topics covered at this week's meeting of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene in Philadelphia. My next guest is here to report about the bedbug symposium he organized. Rajiv Vaidyanathan is an associate director of the Vector Biology at SRI International in Harrisonburg, Virginia. He's here in our New York studios. Welcome to the program Science Friday, Dr. Vaidyanathan.
Thank you.
So I guess we have to start, you know, we can't leave anybody hanging with this sex business. So tell us, what is it that's interesting about the sex life of bedbugs?
There's a lot that's interesting about the sex lives of bedbugs. First of all, bedbugs themselves in the dark, I guess everything looks like a female bedbug. And so male bedbugs don't really discriminate, and they will attempt to mount and copulate with blood-fed immatures, blood-fed males, and blood-fed females. That's just the beginning of it. On top of that, the male bedbugs themselves will penetrate the female's body cavity and will actually try to fertilize from the inside rather than going through an outside.
Ouch.
The term for sex among bedbugs is known as traumatic insemination.
Yike. But apart from their proclivities, is there something about their mate selection that's making this problem worse?
True. Work done by Kobe Shaw and Ed Vargo at North Carolina State University tested three different hypotheses. Basically, where are bedbugs coming from and why are there so many of them in the U.S. now? The question was, did bedbugs originate from a U.S. population and radiate outward? Or was there an individual introduction into the U.S. from outside, and did that radiate? Or have there been multiple introductions from multiple sites over time? What Kobe and Ed found was that multiple introductions over time account for the diversity in bedbug populations in North America. That's part of it. When you look across populations, you'll find a lot of genetic diversity. However, if you look at one population of bedbugs, say it's one infestation in one apartment, in one building, there's pretty much one grandmother, one Eve, that determined that entire infestation. Her sons and daughters mate with one another, so there's extreme inbreeding. When they have progeny, those brothers and sisters will mate with one another. And so the degree of genetic diversity within any one bedbug population is very, very low. What Kobe and his colleagues at North Carolina and collaborators at Rutgers found is that even within an apartment building, if you have two populations of bugs, they don't even mate with one another. So you could have one line from one grandmother that that occupies several apartments. You might have a line from a different grandmother that occupies a separate set, but the two of them don't actually mate with each other. So the degree of genetic diversity, or rather the degree of mating between those two populations is about as much as you'd get between one population in New York and another in Vancouver.
So what are the implications of this for control strategies?
Absolutely. I think two points that came out at the American Society TropMed Hygiene meeting were, one, the degree of inbreeding, and two, the degree of insecticide resistance. Consider that work done by Ken Haynes and colleagues at the University of Kentucky has found that basically every bedbug population that they've looked at, or I should say almost everyone they've looked at, is highly resistant to the most common class of insecticides that are used for bedbug control. Now, if populations that are resistant are only mating with themselves, and their progeny only mate with themselves, and so on, then there is an extremely conservative selection for those genes which are resistant to insecticides. So these two stories go hand in hand.
I see. We're talking bed bugs, and if you have a question or if you're itching yourself, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. What about this idea of inbreeding? Most people think or were taught that inbreeding decreases vitality of a species, and this doesn't seem to be the case with bed bugs.
It doesn't. Frankly, the mechanism is not known. Part of that may well be that inbreeding in this case has a selective advantage in that it's actually choosing for genes, say, for pesticide resistance. But beyond that, frankly, we're not sure.
Hmm. What about your own research? You're doing some interesting work trying to figure out where infestations are occurring.
That's correct. In a recent symposium, the two major deficits in bedbug research were identified as quick and efficient detection and effective control mechanisms. So our work at SRI International is focusing on identifying the volatile compounds that are present in bedbug samples that basically give you a signature perfume. And if we can identify what the constituents of that signature perfume are, we can use that to enhance our detection of bed bugs. And two, we can also use that to saturate traps and enhance collection and control.
I think we have time for one quick question from one of our listeners. Let's go to Eric in Kansas City. Eric, welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, howdy. I'm going to Europe here in a few months, and I was wondering if there was anything I could take or get for preventive maintenance for hotels.
Preventive maintenance, a good way to put it. Dr. Vainathan.
You know, over 40% of Americans have changed their behaviors in hotels because of bed bugs. There is no one thing in terms of preventive maintenance. The best thing that the two best things you can do really are, one, kind of check ahead of time on bedbugregistry.com, and if you're there, check under the beds for the telltale fecal spots. What I always do, and number two, and when I actually go, I keep my luggage in the bathroom.
Why?
Because there's a less chance of having bedbugs in the bathroom than actually in the bedroom itself.
Huh. And is there... is that a concern that people should have? I mean, as in traveling or just in places where there are infestations?
In the last 10 years, and this is a very important point you bring up, in the last 10 years, 25% of hotels in the United States have had bed bugs, have sprayed for bed bugs. Hmm. However, that is a very misleading number. Less than 1%, in fact, 0.6% of all the rooms have had bed bugs in them. That really points to the importance of precise detection. Mm. If you detect bed bugs in a hotel and you give off an insecticidal bomb in the lobby or you indiscriminately spray in every room, it's a waste of money, it's ineffective, and it's really disastrous PR. Mm. It's very important to determine exactly where they are and to target that area.
Okay, let's take another call now and go to Maya in Acton, Massachusetts. Welcome to Science Friday. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling to inquire whether I should be concerned when my sister comes to visit from Brooklyn, where her building occasionally has bed bugs.
Okay. What about that?
I think you should be concerned that your sister lives in Brooklyn.
Now, wait a minute. We're in New York, pal. You're going to walk out of here. You're going to get in trouble. No, seriously, is there any concern? Is there any concern?
Bed bugs don't travel on an individual. Bed bugs are wingless, and so they're entirely dependent on being carried either on upholstery, on a bed, and occasionally they do migrate into luggage. It's important to distinguish between detection and infestation. And if there's one bed bug, it's not a big deal. And unfortunately, people do tend to overreact to a single bed bug. However, it's the infestations that can actually lead to bites, to redness, and to actual psychological distress. If your sister's coming from Brooklyn, what you might want to try is to take a travel lint roller and go around the outside of the luggage. Anything that's on it, you might be able to pick up.
Wow.
And is her laundry okay? Should I be concerned with her clothing?
If the, you know what,
aesthetically
the,
or
the, that's right.
She does the laundry at my house, mind you. Uh-huh,
the, okay. And you know what? That's very good, because the two best things to do for actually controlling and reducing bed bug populations in the house are, number one, getting rid of clutter and vacuuming, and number two, drying the clothes on the hottest setting in the dryer. It's not the hot water of the wash, but it's really keeping them in the dryer.
Okay, Maya, thanks for that call. What about, you know, the decision to stop using DDT? Is that taken a weapon away from what might be an effective control strategy?
I think Ken Haynes from University of Kentucky made a very good point that by the time DDT was commonly used for bed bug control, bed bugs were already resistant to it. The first instances were in 1947, 1948, and today bed bug resistance to insecticides and to DDT in particular has been documented in over 18 countries.
Okay. I think we have time for one more quick call and go to George in Cincinnati. Welcome to Science Friday. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Great show. I enjoy it very much, especially this particular topic. I'm an airline pilot, and I'm on the road all the time, and it's a real concern for me with bed bugs. But I wanted to ask really two questions. One, can dogs really detect bed bugs within a residence? And two, if, for instance, you're traveling and you wake up and you find that you've been bitten and there are bed bugs in the room, what should you do? Should you just destroy everything you have and come home with a clean set of clothes? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Great. So for question number one, yes, canines are used to detect bed bugs. Just as dogs have been trained to find bombs or drugs, they can also sniff out bed bugs. The problem with that is that there are a high level of false positives. Sometimes you think they detect it when they don't, and it can get really expensive. So although they can be useful, it's not a sustainable long-term solution. About your second question, if you do find that you've been bitten, as I mentioned to the previous caller, probably the best thing you can do is when you get home, wash everything on a hot cycle and then put it at the hottest setting of your dryer for the longest time. And be careful of the seams of your luggage, which is where the bed bugs will hide.
All right. Well, I'm afraid we have to leave our bed bug primer there. Rajiv Vaidyanathan is the Associate Director of Vector Biology at SRI International in Harrisburg, Virginia. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm Joe Palca, and this is Science Friday from NPR.